come now and let us reason together. That's what we're interested in doing. That's what we want to do in this seminar. We want to think, to use our heads, not just accept a belief, whether creation or evolution, without evidence. Many argue that Christianity, creationism, these are irrational. They're not based on evidence. But that's not what I'm going to be arguing in this seminar. We want to examine the evidence and reason through to the appropriate conclusion, hopefully without bias. Seems like being unbiased would be a simple concept, but we know sometimes that's pretty difficult to do because we tend to want to believe what we want to, whatever's convenient, without having to feel bad about it, without guilt. So it's easy to become biased against anything that goes against what we want to believe and practice. And many are biased when approaching the creation-evolution question. Many are biased against evolution because of a strong desire to retain their belief in God in spite of whatever evidence they may have been presented with, and vice versa. Many are biased against creation, religion. Religion certainly can stand in the way of what we want to believe and practice at times. The idea of God carries with it many expectations that we just don't want to hear sometimes. So it's easy to be biased against creation. But we don't want to be that way. We want to be sincere. We want to search for the truth with open hearts, open minds, no matter where we're led by the evidence. That's what we want to do in this seminar. There are many positive proofs for the existence of God and the inspiration of the Bible. A listing of those proofs is not the goal of this seminar. You can see materials addressing those topics on our website, www.apologeticspress.org. In this seminar, we want to look at the opposite side of the coin, the main response to the creation model that is given by atheists today. The natural response to the creation proposition, if you've been in the school system or read much over the last 40 to 50 years, the natural response is, what about all the scientific evidence which supposedly proves evolution and disproves the biblical model? Atheists, these are people who don't believe in God, evolutionary theory is their response to the question of creation and origins. And it's proven to be an effective message today. We've been told that evolution is the scientific choice, that people who don't believe it, people who believe in the Bible, are somehow unscientific. In fact, they're delusional, beholden to ancient myths, fables, and fairy tales. They're unenlightened, carriers of a blind, evidenceless faith. The well-known evolutionist and professor of zoology at Oxford University, Richard Dawkins, he said, "It is absolutely safe to say that if you meet somebody who claims not to believe in evolution, that person is ignorant, stupid, or insane, or wicked, but I'd rather not consider that." And that attitude is typical among scientists in the evolutionary community today. If you don't believe in evolutionary theory, if you believe in creation, you're an ignoramus. You're an uneducated hillbilly. The pressure is high, especially in universities, to accept evolution and reject creation. And so many are being bullied into doing just that. Well, is Dawkins right? Is it true that anyone who doesn't believe in evolution is ignorant, stupid, insane, or wicked? Well, I'll grant him that his statement might accurately portray some in the creationist community, but not all creationists by far. The true creation position is perfectly in harmony with the scientific evidence. A false creation model may not be, but the true creation model will be. Now, that said, I want to qualify my argument about creation being scientific. I want to make sure I define my terms clearly. Just because someone calls himself a creationist, it doesn't mean that he's using logic and reason and the evidence from science to arrive at that conclusion. In this seminar, when I argue that creation and its adherents are scientific, I'm not talking about people who believe in God without any reasonable evidence, who claim that belief in God is like a leap into the dark, a leap of faith, as they call it, accepting God without any proof, which is the idea that the denominational world and Hollywood seem to have about faith, like the statement that was made way back in the 1947 movie, Miracle on 34th Street. Faith is believing when common sense tells you not to. I'm not talking about that kind of hocus pocus when I say that creationists are scientific. That sort of thinking gives creationists a bad name, and it's not what the true creation model argues. The Bible doesn't teach such an erroneous idea. When I say that creationists are scientific, I'm talking about people who arrive at the truth from the facts, the evidence. I'm talking about people who truly believe in John 8:32, that one can know the truth. You don't just have to accept the Bible and God without evidence or just rely on vague inner feelings or goosebumps. The biblical portrait of faith is not what many in Christendom define it to be, believing something without evidence and even against reason and common sense, or like putting on a blindfold and jumping off a cliff, trusting that you'll be caught even though you don't even know what's over the edge of the cliff. Biblical faith is like the trust we have in a parent or a friend. Do we blindly trust our parents? No, we trust them because they've proven themselves to be trustworthy. In other words, our faith is based on evidence. In this seminar, I argue that faith in naturalistic evolution, a doctrine in which atheists must believe, that's actually a blind faith. Creation isn't. But atheists are right when they turn the tables and point at many within Christendom and argue that they have a blind faith. Sadly and tragically, it's true that many religious people leave reason and thinking at the door when they approach religion and the Bible, when they enter a building for worship. They leave their heads at the door and proceed to rely on emotion and feelings instead of truth when they approach the question of God. They have a feel-good religion. These kind of people do whatever makes them feel good instead of what God said. Their evidence for God is skin tinglies and unobservable, unprovable inner feelings that they claim are from the Holy Spirit. And that's unfortunate because it's unbiblical and because it's hurting the case for God and creation. Many people rightly rebel against this kind of irrational behavior. They recognize that that kind of touchy-feely faith isn't based on the evidence. Using your head, using thinking and reason. Instead, it's based on feeling and therefore doesn't require any evidence. People who believe in things for which there is no evidence are being, by definition, irrational. And this applies to both creationists and evolutionists. In the field of philosophy, what's known as the law of rationality is used to determine whether a person is being irrational or illogical when coming to a conclusion about something. It says that one should only draw those conclusions that are warranted by the evidence. In other words, you should only believe what you can prove. Or as the Bible puts it in 1 Thessalonians 5:21, but examine everything carefully, hold fast to that which is good. The Bible, authored by God, tells us that we can know the truth. God doesn't want us to accept it without evidence. It can be tested and proved, and God expects us to do so. Now, if the law of rationality is violated, if someone draws a conclusion that doesn't follow from the evidence, that perpetrator is known to be being irrational. So, for example, if a person sees two green sedans drive by and concludes from that bit of evidence that all cars are green, that conclusion would be considered irrational, since there's not enough evidence to lead to that conclusion. God doesn't expect us to trust in Him without evidence. He expects us to weigh the evidence available to us and come to the clear truth based on that evidence. The Bereans of Acts 17:11 are called fair-minded because they searched for evidence before they believed what they were taught. We can know the truth that will set us free, John 8:32, not just feel it, accept it without evidence. The Bible, which is the basis for the true creation model, makes it clear that God has, in fact, left enough evidence for us to come to the truth about His existence and the origin of the universe. We can know the truth about creation. Nevertheless, He did not leave Himself without witness, and that He did good, gave us rain from heaven and fruitful seasons, filling our hearts with food and gladness, Acts 14:17. This says that God left us evidence by even the seasons of His existence and even certain things about the nature of God. For since the creation of the world, His invisible attributes are clearly seen, being understood by the things that are made, even His eternal power and Godhead, so that they are without excuse, Romans 1:20. We can come to the conclusion by studying the things that are made that God exists, and we can even learn certain things about the nature of God from that evidence. The heavens declare the glory of God, and the firmament shows His handiwork, Psalm 19:1. So according to the creation model, there's evidence for creation. We can examine nature and conclude that it points to God. Now, the naturalist, the atheist, argues that he bases his beliefs on things you can observe physically and argues that creationists can't observe God. So that makes me unscientific in his mind. The National Academy of Sciences is an organization that heavily influences what's taught in schools and textbooks across America, and it's heavily influenced by naturalists today. Here's how they define science. One goal of science is to understand nature. The statements of science must invoke only natural things and processes. The statements of science are those that emerge from the application of human intelligence to data obtained from observation and experiment. Progress in science consists of the development of better explanations for the causes of natural phenomena. Notice how much they emphasize natural, nature, observation. Anything supernatural has been kicked out of the classroom. God, creation, that's not natural. You can't observe that, so it's unscientific. Many of the greatest scientific minds of the past, the fathers of many scientific disciplines, were creationists who looked at science as a study that pointed to God. And yet the NAS won't even allow God in the classroom? Well, is creation unscientific, really? Well, granted, we can't directly observe God. We can't taste, touch, hear, smell, or see Him. So we can't use empirical science to directly prove that God exists. But it doesn't follow that there's no physical evidence for His existence. Consider the work of forensic scientists. They come in after a crime, for example, and examine the evidence and are able to come to reasonable conclusions about what happened, who did it, when they did it, how they did it, sometimes even why they did it, without actually having even witnessed the act, using inductive and deductive reasoning. Much of science is based on that same principle, especially the historical sciences like geology, astronomy, paleontology, archaeology. No one witnessed the formation of the geologic strata. They have to be analyzed after the fact to figure out what happened. Many times in scientific study, facts are discovered and inferences are made about what did happen, what will happen, what is happening, all without necessarily having physically witnessed whatever it is. The nature of the evidence is indirect rather than direct. Ironically, much of evolutionary science is based on indirect, not direct evidence. Since no one has ever witnessed many of the fundamental premises of evolution, like abiogenesis, matter spontaneously generating, creatures evolving across phylogenic boundaries, a Big Bang creating a universe, these phenomena and others haven't been observed, and yet they're considered science. They're allowed to be kept in the classroom, in the textbooks, and creation isn't, when both are based on indirect evidence. When we examine the evidence in the universe, the truth of God's existence, the error of naturalism, is so clear that according to the Bible, it's without excuse. A person will not be able to claim on Judgment Day that the evidence wasn't clear enough. There'll be no excuse. So the blind faith believer concept is untrue. Creationists who believe in such things are in error. But evolutionists who believe in such things are in error as well. And in this seminar, we'll see proof that the naturalist, the atheistic evolutionist, is guilty of a genuine blind faith. And ultimately, unlike the creationist, the atheist has no choice but to have a blind faith. In this seminar, we'll be discussing evolution, and the same evidence that we'll be looking at, which addresses evolution, also has implications about creation. That evidence provides support for the creation model. But before we dive in, consider for a moment, why is it important to spend any time discussing evolutionary theory? What's the big deal? Isn't this seminar really a waste of time? Who cares if evolution is true? You know, maybe God just created the universe using some form of evolutionary theory. Who cares? I can think of several people off the top of my head that have asked that very question of me. You know, why not theistic evolution? Now, that's a valid question and one that deserves an explanation. Theistic evolutionists are people who believe in evolutionary theory and yet also hold to a belief in God. Many are Bible believers, but not all. Now, you won't arrive at a belief in evolution from a straightforward reading of the Bible. Genesis 1, for example, someone had to have introduced the idea of evolution to you and given you some evidence that seemed compelling enough to cause you to believe it, or you had to feel pressured to believe it in spite of the evidence. Later on in this seminar, we'll look at the evidences that are commonly given for evolution, and you'll see that not only do these evidences not prove evolution, but they in fact disappear as evidence at all upon closer examination. The theistic evolutionist, however, instead of trusting the Bible's commentary on the creation model and challenging the alleged evidences for evolution, he caves to the pressure of the scientific community. Sadly, his faith in science trumps his faith in God, and he compromises his faith in the Bible. But at the same time, he can't quite bring himself to totally throw the Bible out, so he tries to squeeze evolution into the Bible, usually by reinterpreting and twisting the meaning of Genesis 1. Well, is there anything wrong with this approach? I mean, can a person accept evolution and the Bible simultaneously and still be consistent? And is that a safe thing to do? The answer is no, and there are at least four reasons why. First, if evolutionary theory is true, then Genesis' account of creation is at best misleading and at worst inaccurate, which would categorize the Bible as uninspired, and many have made that claim. Genesis 1 is a straightforward reading, a straightforward text in its declaration that the universe was created in six literal days, and it gives no indication that it should be taken in any other way. In fact, Moses used practically every means at his disposal in the Hebrew language to convey the idea that the days of Genesis 1 were 24-hour days, including using the Hebrew word yom instead of a word that means an age or long period of time, like perhaps dor. He modified the word with a number, adding the words evening and morning, and he used the plural form yamim in Exodus 20:11 when talking about the creation. Only one such modification would be enough to clarify that the days of Genesis 1 were literal days and not some vague period of time. But when taken all together, there can be no doubt about Moses' meaning. Creation is true, not evolution. The biblical evidence that disproves theistic evolution is not what I'll be discussing in this seminar, but we have lots of material at Apologetics Press which soundly proves that truth. Bottom line, if evolution is true, then the Bible is wrong. If the Bible is true, evolution is wrong. There's no middle ground on this. Second, believing that the Genesis account is not literal and somehow allows for evolution puts Moses, Paul, and even Christ himself in the position of being mistaken or liars. The Bible would be proven to contradict itself. Moses said in Exodus 20:11, "For in 6 days the Lord made the heavens, the earth, the sea, and all that is in them." What's left beyond these things? Nothing. That's everything. So everything was created in 6 days, not 6 billion years, and God rested on the seventh. The whole seven-day week concept is based on that idea, with the Jews celebrating the Sabbath on the seventh day, not the seventh billion years. Question. When Moses used the word for day in Exodus 20 to tell his audience how long it took God to create the universe, did his audience understand what he meant? Did they understand him to mean 6 long periods of time? If so, then they would have worked 6 long periods of time and rested on the seventh. But that's not what they did. They worked 6 literal days and rested the seventh. Well, did they get it wrong? Did they not do what God expected them and that he intended them to do regarding the Sabbath? No, because if they did, according to Exodus 31:14, it would have been a capital offense. In fact, an example of a God-ordained execution of someone who violated the Sabbath is given to us in Numbers 15. If there were ever a rule that would have been careful to be followed properly and understood properly, to get it right, it was the Sabbath law. Now keep in mind that Moses also authored the book of Genesis, and its audience was the same as the audience that he was speaking to in Exodus 20. Clearly, Moses intended to convey the same idea he presented in Genesis 1. And he conveyed it also in Exodus 20, that the universe was created in 6 literal days. Was Moses wrong about creation? If so, tear out the first 5 books of your Bible. In Romans 1, 18 through 32, Paul, clearly referring to humans, said that God's attributes have been clearly seen since the creation of the world. Romans 1:20, a statement which couldn't be made if humans weren't around to see those characteristics for billions of years, like the evolutionary model claims. Question, was Paul wrong? If so, you need to tear out most of your New Testament now. In Mark 10:6, Jesus said, "God made man from the beginning, male and female." And again in Luke 11:50 through 51, he said that Abel lived at the foundation of the world. Well, according to the evolutionary timeline, humans are a pretty recent addition to the earth's population. We supposedly showed up on the scene at the very end of the timeline, not at the beginning. Was Jesus wrong? Well, if so, Jesus wasn't deity, and our faith is hopeless. If evolution is true, then Jesus, Paul, and Moses were all liars or mistaken. Third, if theistic evolution is true, then the events of Genesis chapter 1 can't be literal. They can't mean what they seem. They must be figurative or poetic or symbolic, non-literal. The problem is that Genesis 1 is in a clearly historical setting, a literal setting. So if Genesis 1, which is in a historical setting, without any indications in the text that it should be taken as figurative or symbolic or poetic, No indication that it is to be taken as anything other than true history. If Genesis 1 in a historical setting can be taken to be non-historical, then anything in the Bible could be treated the same way. Anything and everything in the Bible becomes questionable as to whether it's to be taken literally. Did a global flood really happen? Did the 10 plagues actually happen, or is that figurative? Did the miracles of Christ actually happen, or should they be taken figuratively? How about the virgin birth of Christ? You know, some Bible believers have gone that route and thrown out all of these into the realm of fiction and figurative language. Can prohibitions against murder or adultery or divorce be taken literally? Now again, our whole faith just crumbles into confusion. The truth is Darwinian evolution and the Bible are simply incompatible. The gap theory, the day-age theory, all of the theories that Bible believers have come up with to try to harmonize the Bible with evolution simply don't cut it. Either the biblical account of creation is true or atheistic evolution is true. There's no middle ground. So we'll be looking specifically at atheistic evolution in the coming sessions, not theistic evolution. For more detailed refutations of the various theistic evolutionary theories that have been proposed, see the Apologetics Press website. Number four, the primary reason we're looking at evolutionary theory in this study is because if there is no God, if atheists are correct, then there must be an explanation as to how human beings arrived in the universe and how the universe itself could arise without his existence. Various forms of evolution have been around for millennia to try to give naturalists a way out of the God question. And today, Darwinian evolution and the Big Bang Theory are the atheist standard explanation. But if these theories can be shown to be implausible, then the atheist is left with no argument. If they're false, the atheism of today collapses, and those who believe in it are irrational, holding to a blind, evidenceless faith. The theistic viewpoint is left on the table, however, as the only logical explanation for our existence, and it is supported by the evidence. That makes this study a worthwhile venture. If evolution is true, then the Bible isn't, and vice versa. There's no middle ground. If the Bible's true, the rational atheist will be interested in that truth. If the Bible's false regarding creation, then the rational Christian will want to reject his belief in the Bible. This is a serious subject that deserves our attention. Many young Christians are leaving the faith due to this single issue because not enough time has been spent showing the support for the creation model and the inadequacies of the evolutionary model. Let's spend some time trying to rectify that issue in this seminar. A key point of this seminar, if evolution is true, science is going to support it. It shouldn't contradict it at every turn. If creation is true, science will support it. Why would science lie? It doesn't have a mind. It doesn't have an agenda. It has no bias or prejudice one way or the other. Scientists may, and sadly many do, but why would science lie? Many famous scientists today claim that the Bible and science are at odds with each other, that they can't both be true, that they're enemies. But science is not an enemy of the Bible. In fact, God Himself instituted the field of science. He commanded scientific exploration. Did you know that? Way back in the Garden of Eden, after He had created Adam and Eve, He told them to subdue the earth and have dominion over it, Genesis 1:28. Well, that's essentially the goal of science. Then in Romans 1:20, we find that we can learn about the existence of God and some of His characteristics, His nature, by studying His creation. He's encouraging that. Why would God encourage the study of creation, which is what science does, if He's somehow anti-science or if science contradicts the Bible? Then in 1 Thessalonians 5:21, we're told to test all things, hold fast what is good. Well, that's essentially an 8-word summary of the scientific method. True science and the Bible are certainly not at odds, God Himself having instituted the field of science. But as I said before, evolution and creation can't both be right. And evolutionists today claim that their theory is the scientific choice. And some are so bold as to claim that their theory is a proven fact scientifically. And anyone who questions it is expelled from the academic community and branded as a wacko who believes in ancient mystic fables that have no scientific backing. Now, these accusations against creationists tend to distract the world from the gaping holes in naturalistic theories. When the scientific evidence is weighed, we find that the laws of science simply do not support the evolutionary model. They stand against the theory and in support of the creation model. The law of causality, first and second laws of thermodynamics, the law of biogenesis, genetics, the laws of probability, These and others stand as impenetrable walls in front of the theory of evolution. We'll be looking, though, at these six areas in the coming sessions, as well as looking at the alleged evidence for evolution in order to see if they do in fact support evolutionary theory. What you'll find is that science supports creation. The evolutionary model is in contradiction with the scientific evidence. Before I can prove that statement, we need to define what I mean by the evolutionary model. What do the evolution and creation models claim? Well, first of all, understand that creationists believe in evolution. We believe that change happens on the earth over time, but we don't believe in the brand of evolution espoused by the bulk of the scientific community today. So in this seminar, when I use the term evolution, I'm using it in the way many naturalists use it. The theory of how the universe got here, not just species. Materialists, naturalists, atheists use the term evolution as a catch-all word, and they simply lump the entire history of the universe into the word evolution. Others are starting to use the term cosmic evolution to give a distinction, but I'll use the term evolution to mean Darwinian evolution or the general theory of evolution in conjunction with some form of the Big Bang theory. I'll also use the term macroevolution to describe this form of evolution. Now, I distinguish that from microevolution. Microevolution, small changes within kinds, changes in size, color, beak size, and so forth. That's with the present kind remaining the same. That's microevolution. Microevolution has been observed to occur in nature and is in perfect harmony with the creation model. But macroevolution hasn't been observed to occur and requires a leap beyond the evidence to accept it. So in this seminar, when I say evolution is unscientific, I'm talking about cosmic evolution, the naturalists, the atheists' explanation for the origin of life, man, and the universe at large. The chart on the screen lists seven fundamental planks of the evolution and creation models. Each item on this chart must be true in order for that model to be true. Number one on the chart, under the evolutionary side, the universe had to either pop into existence through spontaneous generation, or it has to be eternal. It had to have existed forever. On the creation side, we see that it had to have been created by a non-physical being. Number two, on the evolutionary side, you have the fact that life had to spontaneously generate. In other words, abiogenesis is true, whereas under the creation model, of course, it was created by this being that is outside of the universe. Number three, under the evolutionary side, you have all present kinds came about from simpler, earlier kinds. So ultimately, a single-celled organism evolved into invertebrates, and then amphibians, then reptiles, then mammals, and ultimately primates, including man. On the creation side, we see that all present kinds, including all plants and animals, have remained fixed since creation, other than extinctions and genetic variation in those originally created kinds, which have occurred only within narrow limits. New species, subspecies within created kinds can occur, changes in color, beak size, and so forth. In other words, microevolution can occur, but change between kinds or vertical macroevolution is not true according to the creation model. Number four, under the evolutionary side, neo-Darwinism is the mechanism for change across phylogenetic boundaries. Under the creation model, we say that the neo-Darwinism cannot account for the emergence of the planet's species. Number five, humans and apes have a common evolutionary ancestor according to the evolutionary model. Of course, according to the creation model, they have separate lineages. Number six, uniformitarianism is true according to the evolutionary model, and that governs how we view and date the Earth. Under the creation model, we have catastrophism being true. Number seven, the universe is very old. Deep time is true. The universe is billions of years old, according to the evolutionary model. But according to the creation model, the universe is actually relatively young, thousands of years. Now, if any one of these statements is shown to be wrong, the entire model collapses, because these statements constitute fundamental planks of the two origin models. Throughout the following sessions, we're going to look at each of the claims made by the evolutionary model to see if they are in keeping with the evidence. The goal of this seminar is to systematically address these planks of the atheistic evolutionary model in depth to show that science does not support atheism, but rather supports creationism. So we'll come back to this chart several times in the following sessions. In a discussion about the validity of evolution, I find it useful to look at the laws of science to see if they can shed any light on the subject. The laws of science have been discovered through extensive scientific investigation, gathering mounds of evidence that points to some conclusion. If anything can be said to be scientific, it's the laws of science, without doubt. They are, by definition, rational, as defined by the law of rationality. They are concluding statements that have been formed to explain the evidence. How things work in nature at all times without exception. According to the McGraw-Hill Dictionary of Scientific and Technical Terms, a scientific law is a regularity which applies to all members of a broad class of phenomena. Now, for the purposes of this seminar, keep in mind three things about scientific laws. Number one, a scientific law applies to all members of a broad class of phenomena, not just some. There are no exceptions to a law of science. Number two, scientific laws describe what has been observed by scientists to regularly occur in nature, since that's what we can observe. So they say nothing directly about super nature. Number three, a scientific law is by definition rational. It's the conclusion that has been drawn from the scientific evidence. Now keep in mind that the law of rationality says that one should only draw those conclusions that can be drawn from the evidence. So since the laws of science are the conclusions from the evidence, then to hold to a belief that is against these laws is by definition irrational. Famous atheist, theoretical physicist, and cosmologist of Cambridge University, Stephen Hawking. He hosted a show on Discovery Channel in 2011 where he slammed theism and promoted atheism. In that show he said, quote, "The universe is a machine governed by principles or laws, laws that can be understood by the human mind. I believe that the discovery of these laws has been humankind's greatest achievement. Unlike laws made by humans, the laws of nature cannot ever be broken. That's why they're so powerful. The laws of nature are fixed." Evolutionists claim to believe firmly in the laws of science. We're going to be examining that claim to see if it's just words or if the evolutionist truly believes in that idea. Does naturalistic evolution really harmonize with the scientific evidence? Let's study the evidence together in the following sessions.
This has been a presentation of Apologetics Press, an organization dedicated to the defense of New Testament Christianity. Visit us on the web at apologeticspress.org or call 800-234-8558.